This is KDNK Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk. You are listening to Geek Speak. We should have Donna Dalton on the other line.
Hi, Matt. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Great.
Oh, good. Perfect.
Louie is indisposed for this afternoon, and Donna Dalton will be joining us. What else do we want to do?
Pretty soon, I won't be so foreign.
Yeah, you won't be our foreign correspondent. You'll be our front range correspondent.
That's right. Front range correspondent. I like it.
Oh. Let's hear. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. Call in with your questions. 963-2976. 970-963-2976. Don and I are here to answer your technical questions, or if you have a topic for discussion you'd like to hear us go over, call now. So, we got a call already. You're on with the geeks.
Hey, this is Craig and Rifle.
Hey, Craig.
Sorry, I'm not going to hear talk to Lou, but that's okay. You guys are good at what you do.
Absolutely.
With all the problems with Microsoft and their updates, what would you guys recommend as an operating system for people who still have lots of their stuff in Word and Publisher and things associated with Microsoft?
Okay. So the only one I know, so the Publisher one's a little finicky. We'd have to see what other, because they have that old .pu, so your .pub file.
Uh-huh.
I'm not aware of any open source tools that we can use to open those. And I have to see if there's any other file formats that you can export your Publisher files in, because that's the only one I'm not aware of. There's a whole bunch of Office suites. There's OnlyOffice, LibreOffice, OpenOffice. There's a whole bunch of open source tools that are available to open Word, Excel, PowerPoint files. So that side of it I'm not too worried about, but since you brought up Publisher, we'd have to do a little more looking.
Okay. So
well, and the other thing, too, you can use Microsoft software on a Mac, too, if you decide to go the Mac way instead of Windows.
Is there a Publisher opening tool for Mac?
Not that I know of. That's the only thing, right? They might have something like Scribus or something like that. Let's see. I'd have to Google it.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do right now. See if there's a see what kind of export options we have for Publisher. It looks like you may be able to export a Publisher file to either PDF or XPS, which PDF.
Yeah, that
is,
wouldn't be that hard to do. You can do it. You can do it like print to PDF.
Yeah, it looks like it's actually built into the export function on at least current versions of Publisher. So, that export will probably give you a few extra options over using the print, the print spool to make a PDF.
Hey, Matt, okay. Is there a Office 365 on a version of Publisher or no?
Yes, I think there is. I'd have to go look at my account. But there is an Office.
As someone with a small business, and we, 22 years in business, I've got six computers that still work with different, platforms, but they're all Microsoft. What to bail on, to go to Macs for all those would be, Mac is just too proud of themselves. I'm sorry.
Right.
we don't do a lot of Photoshop or printing things that Mac, artists and people like
right.
that like Mac. But for basic office work, I don't know that many people that rely on Macintosh to do that. Not to say I don't have Apple products, but I'm highly invested since 1995 in Microsoft going on. So that being said, what platform are you converting Windows 10 or Windows 7's people to comfortably?
So So I don't really have a lot of call for that because most people aren't aware that there's options other than Mac or PC, or, you know, Mac or Microsoft.
No. I understand.
Yeah, so
I have all. Let's say I have all PCs, but if I don't want to use Windows 10, who would I? What would you recommend to someone load?
So the most, well, the one I would test, and the nice thing is you can just put this onto a external, like a pen drive or a USB drive. You can do that and run it live off of that device, and it'll be reasonably quick, and you can kind of take it for a test drive. But I recently ditched Windows on my laptop and switched over to Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, okay.
Yeah. I think it's a nice, for me, it's a nice... kind of balance between security, ease of use, and kind of switching from Windows. I mean, it does look quite a bit different, but I feel like it's a nice balance of the security you can get with Linux and the usability that you're used to on Mac or PC.
Okay. And what about those people like me who have not had any bad issues with Windows Live Mail?
You're lucky.
I have had zero issue in all these years on multiple platforms. Even on my phone, I through Gmail, I get to go to Rothentug, and it opens up as a thing I can read. But as a Windows Live Mail thing, it's been really pleasant for decades.
I guess the big question for me would be, are you connecting to Rothentug through POP or through IMAP?
It could be both.
I'd be kind of surprised, but it'll...
Whatever they wanted us to switch to 3 or 4 years ago, I went with what they wanted.
Okay, that was probably IMAP then, because POP is the older
right.
one. So if it's IMAP, and all of your email is stored on your computer and on the server already, basically you can just fire up Ubuntu, and you can either try... let's see, your Evolution Mail, or you can try Thunderbird. And if you have it on IMAP already, you just connect to it. It'll download and synchronize everything, and you should be able to pretty much pick up where you left off unless you have a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, my wife has Thunderbird, and it seems like the hoops she has to jump through to delete and do this and that compared to what I do with Live Mail is day and night.
Mm-hmm.
I think Thunderbird is really not nearly as user-friendly as Live Mail, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And she sits 2 feet away from me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just have wanted to ask this for a while, and with all the warnings that you see with don't do this update, wait for this update. I keep mm-hmm. delaying updates till they get things figured out. But I've also been very lucky since I went from a 7 to a 10 and not on an older computer. I just put 10 in instead of getting a computer that had 10 built in. I have had so little issues with 10. I keep hearing the stories, but knock on wood, I've got it on 3 different platforms and have had zero difficulty.
Yeah. It is fairly rare that Windows 10 will just sort of eat itself, as I like to say. But it like you said, it does happen. You know, a botched update or something like that. That's why Louie and I are in business. Besides things just failing on their own, Microsoft, you know, breaks things for us sometimes.
So I appreciate the input.
So luckily,
thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. And Donna, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
See ya.
See ya.
So you know, we in the government side of things, Windows 7, of course, is like everybody, you know, they've kind of required everybody to move to Windows 10. But what is after Windows 10? Polaris, or what is it called? Or what is it, Redstone something? No, that's old. That was old too. What's next after Windows 10?
Well, I thought they were going to kind of do the same thing that Mac OS X did, where once they hit version 10, where they're just going to kind of do kind of smaller incremental updates. So, like right now, the current version of Microsoft or of Windows 10 is 2004, is the current, like,
okay,
most up-to-date version. The one before that was 1904, 1908, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And so they're, each one of those updates is adding new features and refining old features. So my understanding is they're going to kind of riff on Windows 10 for quite some time. I think I've started to hear some rumblings about Windows 11 or whatever the next version of Windows is going to be. But I think that's probably pretty far down the pike at the moment. But I'd have to go and research that again.
Well, you know, in the business world, he's right. I mean, we still use Windows 10 for everything, although at some companies, a lot of people still have gone to Macs. But a lot of people in the engineering world have gone to Macs and, of course, Linux. There are people that I used to work with who just, like you, Matt, just got rid of their Windows machine altogether and just went straight Linux. And, of course, Ubuntu is one of the more popular Linux boxes. And it's easily updated and everything. I think, in a way, you have to be somewhat computer savvy to use Ubuntu and Linux, you know, the various flavors of Linux.
Well, I think, yeah, definitely other ones. Ubuntu, they've turned on auto-update, so it's going to come up and say, hey, can I update now? You click yes or no, and then it comes up later if you say no, obviously. But you can just click update. Sometimes it requires a reboot, but most of the time out of the box it doesn't when you're doing an update. Mm-hmm. So we'll just kind of have to see. It's been so easy.
Let me ask you this. When you go into some place like, you know, Best Buy or one of these computer, you know, places that sell computers, I don't know, Fry's Electronics, mm-hmm. do they even sell machines with Linux pre-installed on them these days? I keep wondering why they hadn't done that for so long.
So Dell has partnered with Canonical, which produces Ubuntu, and there are several Dell laptops that can be ordered on the website that come with Ubuntu pre-installed.
Oh, okay, very good. And there's not a lot of bloatware on there like Dell. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't
so much bloatware.
I always buy business class hardware, so it seems like if you get the consumer stuff, you do get a lot of bloatware, or you do get some bloatware. I'm not sure how that is these days. But it seems like the business class equipment comes with a significantly less. So we'll have to see. And also, I know that Lenovo is working on their workstation laptops, and I think some of their workstations will be have the Red Hat's Fedora operating system on it available for purchase. So if you get a Lenovo, you can get Fedora, and if you get a Dell, you can get Ubuntu. So they are coming as pre-installed options. And then there's also several smaller companies like System 76 out of Denver that are selling Linux computers just straight. They make their own. So there's a bunch of cool companies, and some of the big companies are starting to offer it, which is great.
Oh, I think it's been a long time coming, actually. Long time. So 973-2976.
Yep.
Anybody wants to call in with questions? I have a couple of things I wanted to mention. Or do you have some things you wanted to talk about, Matt?
No, I was. I saw from one of my sources online that the new version of the MacBook is going to be, I think, $800 with the new ARM processor this fall.
Oh, very good. I haven't even looked lately, actually.
So
been too busy packing. That would be nice. What's the size of the screen?
I'm not sure if it's either a 12 or a 13. I didn't get a chance to really dig into it. I just saw that it looked like they'd kind of started releasing numbers. And if you can get into like a entry-level MacBook for that kind of price, I'll be curious to see what the specs are. But that seems like if it's a well-built computer, that's, you know, right in there with most of the business laptops I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's great. I still have my, believe it or not, my MacBook Pro 15-inch from 2008 and my iMac from 2012. I mean, these things just don't die. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Upgrade the MacBook Pro anymore, though.
Yeah, the only things people bring those into them, and it's almost always I'm replacing a hard drive, and that's, you know, sometimes there's other little things, but, you know, they're pretty well engineered, so that's like the only thing that fails after, you know, 6 or 8 years.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to also mention, you know, it's interesting about TikTok, what's going on with that?
Yeah,
have you watched? Do you get on TikTok much or?
No, I've pretty much shunned social media at this point since it's either owned by Facebook or the Chinese government. So it's kind of like, well, I'm just gonna skip this stuff.
Yeah, right. But I have watched a few Sarah Cooper videos, which I think are really funny. But you know, some other people who are doing little videos, I think they're kind of funny. But I'm definitely not on it as well. But I guess Microsoft's trying to buy it, right?
Yeah, and so I saw some article about Trump trying to like hold off for 45 days, giving Microsoft 45 days before he tries to make it so that they can't get into the TikTok can't come onto the U.S. market or something like that. So. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft is able to buy the U.S. portion of TikTok. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about, I read this book recently, or at least most of the book, actually. It was called You Are a Thing and I Love You. Have you heard of this book?
No, I haven't.
It's about artificial intelligence and how it works. It's by this woman named Janelle Shane. I think she has a PhD in like artificial intelligence or software programming or something, but yeah, You Look Like a Thing and I Love You. The title of the book actually came from, she was doing some experiments with artificial intelligence and she had tried to program, set up a program, an artificial intelligence program, so to speak, to make a pickup line. And that was one of the pickup lines that it came up with. And so that's what she named the book. But the byline is how artificial intelligence works and why it's making the world a weirder place. So you haven't heard of this woman, huh?
No, I haven't really looked at AI very much yet. But there's some real interesting fundamental, like metaphorical and philosophical questions that you have to start thinking about answering once you get to a general purpose AI. So I don't know if the book goes into that part of it, but I've always loved philosophy. So that's something that's been the more interesting part of AI to me is that than the actual nuts and bolts of it.
Well, and I think what people don't realize is, you know, artificial intelligence, that's in a way what is going, you know, the image capture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So if you, and there are definitely problems because if you, for example, go to Google Images and you say, you want to see images of CEOs because it's learned what a typical CEO looks like, what will pop up is it will be mostly men, right? And that's what it learns. And so it's almost it's not necessarily a good thing in certain cases if that's all it's showing you. And it gives you the impression that, you know, all CEOs are men or whatever. You can just take it to however you want.
I think there are some
anything, right?
Exactly. Well, yeah, and I think there are some statistical biases that the AI is going to latch onto, like that one in particular. Also, that I'm trying to remember the statistic. I think something like 50 or 60% of CEOs are taller than 6 feet, and there's some other things like that as well.
Right.
You know, there's other statistical nuances to you know, searching for CEO, and it's showing up with, you know, tall men mostly.
Right. And that, and this artificial intelligence is also how it's watching what we do searches for and things like that. So, you know how you do a search and then all of a sudden you start seeing ads, right?
Yes.
So it's anyway, it's a very interesting book. And you know, she has done some, of course, videos that you can see. Her name again is Janelle Shane, and I just found it really fascinating because I always wondered how that worked. And when you start reading about it and you realize, wow, no wonder this happens, and wow, there are definitely biases. You got to be really careful with artificial intelligence. So,
yeah.
If you were programming, you know what I mean. It's not a typical program, but anyway,
right? Yeah,
I thought it was interesting.
The data set for training the AI becomes very important because it's going to build its, what do you want, like almost thought process I'm sure there's a particular word, name for
decision-making process or whatever.
It's going to make its decision tree based on your input data. So if your input data is fundamentally biased, either because that's just how it is, or it's been biased because of the people accumulating, the data or whatever it is, that's going to show in the outcome of this as well.
Right. And the book goes into all that anyway. I thought it was really funny. She actually started out doing things like making recipes, and she would give it a data set of ingredients, and then it would make all these funny recipes. And anyway, it's actually a pretty amusing book, but
I'll have to add that to my read list.
Yeah, do that. I just got it at the library. The other thing I wanted to talk about, unless you had something specific, and we can say our phone number again.
Yeah. Hey, if we have a few more minutes left, 963-2976. Call in with a short question, and we'll try to answer it. All right. So what's the last topic?
So, Matt. Yeah, have we talked about the Apple Watch or whatever version you have and AFib? Have we talked about that in the past?
No, I don't think we've talked about atrial fibrillation with any of these wrist devices, because a lot of them do monitor heartbeat. So obviously, they may be able to recognize atrial fibrillation or some other forms of heart defects or disease.
Well, a friend of mine had an older version of the Apple Watch. I have a newer version. Mine actually has an AFib test that you can do, but hers didn't. But she noticed for a while that her watch was showing erratic heart rates on it, and she never noticed that she wasn't really feeling very well. And then one day we were all walking, a bunch of my girlfriends from, forever, and she said, "You guys, I need to sit down." And so we said, "Oh, sure, we can stop." And so we stopped, and I thought, God, that's really strange. That's not like her to make that comment. And well, what ended up happening was she ended up finding out, because she thought something was wrong with her watch. And she went into the Apple store, and they said, "There's nothing wrong with your watch. You probably need to go see a doctor." Sure enough, she had AFib, and she attributes her watch as basically saving her life, because she would never have really noticed. She just thought that's how she was always feeling, not really that great.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, though. And now, she's gotten the cardioversion and the ablation and everything, so she's actually got rid of the atrial fibrillation now. But she can look on her watch, and now it always shows her heart rate is not erratic anymore, and her AFib has gone away. So I just think, for me, the first thing I did was I went out and got an Apple Watch, like the Apple Watch 5, I guess, mm-hmm. has the app on there already. So anyway, I just thought that I'd bring that up for, people who are a little bit older than you are, Matt.
Yeah, that's amazing that, one, we can fix the fibrillation, and two, that a little device on your wrist is sensitive enough to figure that out and be able to go, "Well, my heartbeat's inconsistent," and the device is freaking out. So it's like, well, go, it's the user's broken, not the device in this case.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up, and, so fortunately, I don't have AFib, according to my watch, anyway.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
All right. You've been listening.
Oh, man.
We're out of time already. You've been listening to Geek Speak on Katie. Yeah, it does. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, guest host Donna Dalton.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll be back on the third Monday, so we'll be back at 4:30 on the 17th. Talk to you then. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk. Have a great week, everyone.